It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, Cecil Harvell. Wes is not with us today. We've got Cecil Harvell of Harvell & Collins. As always, I'm looking forward to the conversation. And Cecil, I have to acknowledge as we begin the program today, you know, one of the things that you have consistently promoted throughout is the issue of planning and preparation. So I want to commend you on that one. We've had a series of conversations over the past couple of weeks that directly relate to that. And I mentioned that as at the opening for our audience to think one of the benefits, one of the key benefits to seeking sound legal advice is the planning aspect. Now, that may not apply to our conversation today, but I just want to mention that at the outset. Well, good afternoon to you, Cecil.
Good afternoon, Lockwood. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And here we are again on a Tuesday. Wow, the weeks just fly by.
They
here
do.
We are moving into mid-October. So, Lockwood, I want to talk about and make our listeners aware and bring to their attention. Maybe we start talking about it as just the power of that certificate of marriage. The impact of the certificate of marriage. And now we're not going to talk about marriage, Lockwood.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
But we're going to talk about the impact of that on how one can plan their estate and the effects of analyzing an estate from a surviving spouse. In the state of North Carolina, a surviving spouse has a statutory right to many different things. First of all, they have a statutory right to be the first up to serve as executor, unless there's a last will and testament that directs otherwise. Now, if a husband directs that his brother or sister be the executor, and it's in writing and it's a last will and testament appropriately witnessed and notarized, then the courts will honor that, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But if there is no last will and testament at all, and the estate is going to pass by administration, then the first person that is going to have the authority to open the estate is the surviving spouse. So right there, we begin to see how the state of North Carolina is going to favor the spouse. The spouse then has a right to an annual allowance, a year's support, if you will, of $60,000. And this is to the exclusion of any creditors. This is usually applied, Lockwood, in smaller estates, to be honest. Maybe there's a paid-for home. Maybe there's some money in the bank account. But possibly there's also some creditors. And the spouse is able to take the first $60,000 of personal property to the exclusion of these creditors as his or her year's support. So, once again, we see where the spouse has some real credibility with the estate process. Probably the largest election by a spouse would be what we refer to, and if what is referred to in the law, is the elective share. And this is an election that a surviving spouse can make to claim a percentage of the net value of the estate, notwithstanding what the will might say, Lockwood. So to set the background for this very important thing for our listeners to understand is that if I have clients who come in who are married, and of course, Lockwood, this in 2023, you know, so many folks are in second marriages,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know, third marriages. Whatever the factual circumstances might be. Maybe they lost their spouse and they've remarried, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they divorced when they were young and now have remarried. Whatever the case might be, but we are seeing, as one would expect, a lot of clients who are in second and third marriages. But they are married.
Right.
And the law doesn't seem to distinguish between whether or not it's that career marriage of 65 years or whether it's a marriage of, you know, 3 or 4 years. It's a marriage.
Uh-huh.
And what I'm leading up to here is that the client then says in the second marriages, possibly they make the comment that, well, my spouse and I have agreed that our assets will go to our respective children. And she has her accounts, and I have mine, and we're enjoying our marriage and our companionship. But upon our death, she wants her accounts to go to her children, and I have no problem with that, and I want my accounts to go to mine. Well, that sounds wonderful and simple, but absent a prenuptial agreement, the state of North Carolina says otherwise. The state of North Carolina looks at the number of years of marriage and allows the surviving spouse to elect a percentage based on the number of years of marriage, and the percentage can escalate to 50% of the net value estate very, very quickly. So the bottom line, Lockwood, is that the surviving spouse cannot really be written out of the will, even though the people are not doing that out of any kind of emotional spite or anything of that nature. It's just simply by agreement that they've agreed to plan their estate accordingly. I then have the unfortunate task of explaining this law to them and then explaining to them that even though they want to not provide for their spouse in their will, that the state of North Carolina has a law that very likely will conflict with that objective, that intention. And then I have to explain that. I usually make a copy of the statute, which is not the part relative to the percentages, and give that to the client, give them an opportunity to take that home and study it, and then come back, and we begin to plan around this. But easily you are seeing, Lockwood, this afternoon, where I'm talking about just the power of that certificate of marriage as we begin to plan our estate. The spouse having the right to be the executor, the right to a certain percentage to the exclusion of creditors, the right to a certain percentage, notwithstanding that they don't want to leave their estate to each other. So all of these things have to be juggled. We have to get our ducks in order and cross these hurdles in each and every file where there is anything other than, you know, just an alter survivor plan.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, and at the opening of the program, I had no knowledge of what our content would be today. I mentioned planning is one of the key elements of good legal advice, and we're hearing that from our legal advisor here today, Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. I'll remind you, by the way, if you need any information after this conversation's over, don't hesitate to give them a call, 252-726-9050, 726-9050. Go online to harvellandcollins.com. First question on the issue of prenuptial agreements. Now, obviously, the word prenuptial, meaning before the marriage. Let's say we've got I've got a variety of conflicts coming up here a moment. But let's say we get into this situation. The husband and wife sit down with you. Both of them have previous marriages. And they say, okay, we would like to, you know, establish the structure for divvying out our assets. But we don't have a prenuptial agreement. Is there a way to create a document that will serve, if you will, as that prenuptial agreement post-nuptials?
There absolutely is. And that is Lockwood, exactly what it's referred to. That would be a during the marriage contract or a postnuptial agreement. So a prenuptial agreement would be a contract that would be negotiated and entered into before there's a certificate of marriage. A postnuptial would be an agreement that's negotiated and entered into after there is a certificate of marriage. In both agreements, the parties need independent advice and counsel, and they need to make sure that they are fully aware of what they're signing, and we need to have, you know, conflicts eliminated.
You said independent advice. So I and my spouse sit down with you, say, okay, we need to do postnuptial agreements. Mm-hmm. One of us should seek another attorney, possibly, or is it acceptable that one attorney handle both accounts?
What we do at our office, which is the custom, which is the procedure, is that we can draw up the document, we can lift the heavier of the load, if you will, by drawing up the document, hearing what the various parties have to say, and conforming a document consistent with those objectives. But eventually, one of the two parties to the contract are going to need to take that document after we have created it. They're going to need to take that document to a lawyer, and we many times will help them find the one and you know, get the copy of the document over to the other lawyer and assist in any way we can with that. But the bottom line is that they're going to need an opportunity to review that with an independent lawyer.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell, Harvell and Collins. Stunning disclosure here, a bit of information for us. Harvell and Collins, and remember, spell out the word and, harvellandcollins.com, and that number, 252 area code 726-9050. Cecil, we're talking about the issue of the certificate of marriage and your comment that it's a quite a significant document from the perspective of North Carolina. I wanted to introduce one other question here as we're talking about this. Okay, we got married in Idaho. Their rules and regulations are a little different. Now we've relocated to North Carolina. Which state has jurisdiction in this debate, and what do you do in those challenges?
Well, the marriage and the estate is going to be interpreted based on the state in which the parties reside. So even though they got married in Idaho, the contract of marriage, the legal ins and outs of the marriage, the legal ins and outs of the estate of either one of them are going to be controlled by North Carolina because that's where they happen to be resident, okay? Uh-huh. Now, when they then have an Idaho prenuptial agreement or an Idaho postnuptial agreement, North Carolina will certainly look at that and will honor it, assuming that there aren't any provisions that are inconsistent with North Carolina law, anything against public policy, something of that nature. It is a contract, by the way. It was entered into. It is signed. It's notarized. It was duly negotiated and executed. And North Carolina will abide by its provisions. But it will, again, the interpretation of the estate and of any other marital issue would be according to North Carolina law. Then we look at what the agreement has to say.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Okay, I've got a prenuptial agreement. I was married in Idaho. I've relocated to North Carolina. Everything's fine. I'm hearing from you, Cecil. Wait a second. It would be worthwhile to have this reviewed in North Carolina.
Yes, that would be best.
All right.
To be reviewed and potentially for there to be, you know, a restatement, if you will, of the agreement, and that rather than it being interpreted consistent with Idaho law, the parties agree that it's now to be interpreted consistent with North Carolina law. A prenuptial agreement, Lockwood, why we mentioned the word, because it's such a misunderstood, is right. The way I would put it, misunderstood concept. You know, Lockwood, it really is just a contract. It can address any issue. When people think of prenuptials, they think of, you know, the Hollywood movies that we see, and they think in terms of, you know, divorce and, you know, payouts and, you know, well, if you're married for 10 years, she gets $20 million
right.
and, you know, stuff, you know, things like that we read and see. You know, the prenuptial agreement is a contract. There could be a contract, believe it or not, premarital that doesn't even address divorce, that just addresses these estate issues that I'm referring to. That just addresses that the North Carolina elective share statute does not apply, that we have sought independent advice and we have found out that we aren't going to be able to make last wills and testaments to that exclude our spouse and allow all of our assets to pass to our independent children, and that's what we desire, and therefore we're entering into this contract before we get married to take the state of North Carolina off the platter. The state of North Carolina doesn't have any say-so in our document. I don't want to get political here, but I would say that the prenuptial and the postnuptial at Lockwood are kind of akin to our, quote, libertarian friends.
Right, right.
Okay?
Yeah.
You know, it takes the state out of the off the table. I don't want you, the state of North Carolina, to tell me who my executor might be, who my guardian might be if I were in a tragic accident or had a long-term illness. I don't want you, state of North Carolina, to tell me who I can and cannot name as my beneficiary. I want to have complete autonomy and control over these issues, and therefore me and my wife, partner, whatever, are entering to an agreement whereby we say that we can write whatever we elect to include in our documents, and the state of North Carolina is not going to be able to assert any challenge to that or dictate to us any particular provision.
No, Cecil, you said something.
That's fascinating, isn't it?
It is. Awkward? It is, because you said something a moment ago that really caught my attention, and that is relationship to a will, and that the fact that apparently, and this is my observation, correct me please if I'm wrong, that this certificate of marriage, and you basically were talking about the value, the significance of the certificate of marriage, can in some instances, even if I understand this correctly, preclude some actions within a last will and state will. I'll leave it at that. Is that correct? In other words,
correct. Yeah.
The
prenuptial agreement allows the part, or postnuptial allows the parties to make provisions in their estate planning documents, their will, their trust, that are wholly consistent with their intention. Without having to dance around the elective share, the year's support, the statutory right to executorship, all of those issues are off the table because the folks have waived those issues in the agreement. Yes.
So, again, we're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, and this is a stunning, explanation of the significance of that certificate of marriage. And so in essence, if I see this correctly, the state sees that certificate of marriage as really a separate, apart document that is in some instances kind of overrides other aspects of our estate planning. It strikes me then, Cecil, that many people need to consider here for a moment these agreements, these postnuptial agreements, we'll use that term, as a part of their estate planning, as well as just an understanding between the two parties.
Well, there's just no question about it. And I will hasten to add that these are not documents that are, on the back shelf at our office.
Right.
I mean, we are doing, two and three of these a week, either prenuptial or postnuptial. More and more people are aware of these issues, either before they get married. I know that tomorrow I have a conference with a prenuptial client, but last Friday, Thursday, I had a conference with middle-aged folks who were entering into a postnuptial agreement, and they were affluent on both sides of the aisle, if you will,
right,
whatever that means, that in terms of that word affluent, but they had assets, and they wanted those assets to flow to their individual children, and that was what their agreement was. And they, of course, then were shocked and bewildered several weeks ago when they came in and found out that, you're going to have problems with a will that excludes your spouse, that your spouse and or the agents to your spouse would be able to potentially elect to share in your estate, notwithstanding the fact that you're not including them in your plan. So their next question is, well, what in the world do we do about
right.
that? And of course, what we do about that is we enter into a postnuptial agreement.
This is, I applaud this effort on your part to share this with the public, Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins with us today. I had never you know, you started off the conversation with, well, the importance and the significance of that certificate of marriage. And of course, I gather it probably it varies from state to state. But in North Carolina, my conclusion is that marriage certificate is such a solid document that you have to consider that in your estate planning. And of course, it then becomes complicated once you enter a multiple marriage circumstances. Uh-huh. Real quickly, and won't belabor this too much longer, but I sure do appreciate your time on this one, Cecil. What about instances where there is still, if you will, good relations in the previous marriage between the husband, the wife, the spouses? They have maintained their conversations, their relationships, and one of, let's say, the husband says, I still would like to, my previous wife did a lot for this house. We co-own this house. I want her to have, upon my death, I want her to have that house. Can that be, is that part of that prenuptial or postnuptial agreement?
Well, it could be, but if that's what they've agreed to, you're saying they're divorced.
Right, they're, exactly.
Right, yeah. Well, the husband and or the wife,
right,
of the parties that used to be in a marriage would mm-hmm. be able to do whatever they want to do. And let me put it this way. Until they get remarried.
Right, exactly.
And the state of North Carolina starts telling them in their new marriage that your new wife has a certain percentage of your estate to the exclusion of whatever the agreement had to be with your prior wife. And actually, Lockwood, I have been able, we've got just a few more minutes to walk into my office while we were talking. Less than 5 years, the spouse has a 15% interest.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, right out of the gate, I mean, you know, get married on a Saturday. Well, on Monday, your spouse has a 15% interest.
Wow. Okay.
Not a 0%, but 15%. After 5 to 10 years, between 5 and 10, it's 25%. And then between 10 and 15, it is 33%. And guess what? At 15 years, which Lockwood, 15 years goes mighty quick.
It does.
Doesn't it? You and me have been talking for 15
right.
years. Okay, yep. Actually, much longer than that.
Yep.
It's 50%.
Wow.
So after 15 years of marriage, notwithstanding that agreement with your second or third spouse that uh-huh. we're fine independently, that we want our assets to go to our respective children, the state of North Carolina dictates that 50% of the estate. Now, again, Lockwood, we work around this,
right,
either
right.
through a prenuptial agreement
or post,
through a highly specialized type of trust
mm-hmm.
that we are competent in preparing, actually known as, if you will, an elective share trust.
Uh-huh.
There is a trust that we can create that is, again, consistent with the North Carolina statute, where that 50% goes into a trust for the benefit of the current wife or husband. And then upon their death, it goes back to the mm-hmm. respective children of the prior marriage. And that can be structured. And that is many times a good workaround for folks who did not have a prenuptial or who don't want to enter into a postnuptial.
Right.
So we, that's what we lawyers do. We want to do our best to achieve the objective of the client. The client is making it very clear that they want to leave their assets to their respective children, and yet the state of North Carolina law is telling them something that's contrary to that. And so then the question is, well, Mr. Lawyer, what are you going to do about that?
Right.
What are some of my options?
Right.
Yes.
All right. As we wrap it up with Cecil Harvell, and I think we've just heard possible future conversations about the whole issue of estate planning for all intents and purposes, as well as family planning. This topic, certificate of marriage, that is not, you know, I remember getting married just yesterday, as a matter of fact. Yeah. Now some 50 plus
years.
Well,
I call it the power of the certificate of marriage.
It is.
Marriage is a wonderful thing.
But it is.
And all, but legally, it certainly has consequences.
Ooh.
You know, we know about the emotional and spiritual and
right.
And all of the other kinds of consequences of that marriage, and the religious consequences, mm-hmm. all of those kinds of things. But sometimes we just fail to either acknowledge or know about the legal consequences, and that's what the program touched on today, the legal consequences of a certificate of marriage.
Very significant. I've used that term again, but that is very important. And so as people are thinking about getting married, recognize it's a lot more than, quite frankly, we see on the cover. Cecil Harvell with us this afternoon. Cecil, as always, greatly appreciate your time. I want to remind the audience, please don't hesitate to give them a call. 252 area code 726-9050 or online at harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, harvellandcollins.com. Cecil, as always, thanks for your time.
You're welcome, Lockwood. See you next week.